It's 11:50 p.m. in the snowy autumnal forest of Karuizawa, and you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York, and with me on the other end of the line, on the other coast, are
Molly Lambert
and Tess Lynch.
Hey. Hey, gang.
Hey, gang. Getting back in the groove still.
Yeah, welcome back again still.
Yeah.
We'll always be celebrating your return.
Every week
I'm always
that
returning.
You're back.
Yeah.
It's the eternal return. Give us a call, guys, at 240-46-NIGHT.
You can also text us at the same number or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. No topic is too weird. Well, some are. But that's okay. We screen those out. So go nuts.
Yeah, we'll just group chat about them. They won't make it to
advice.
The air necessarily, but Yeah.
But some of them will.
But we'll never make fun of you for asking like a question.
No, absolutely. And you can be anonymous.
Yeah, you can always be anonymous. Ask us stuff or tell us things that you think we'll be interested in.
So we all were very, very sad, as was pretty much all of LA and many people who enjoyed the writing of Jonathan Gold, to find that he had passed away this past weekend. By the time you listen to this, the news will be a week old. But Jonathan Gold meant a lot to each of us. I think we all had kind of different personal connections to him and his writing. And he was one of the most, if not the most talented food writer. He was he had his beginnings as a music writer at LA Weekly. And he was also just a very generous person when it came to encouraging younger writers. I was looking through my old G-chats, and I found one with Molly from 10 years ago when she was telling me that Jonathan Gold had gotten in touch with her, and we were all kind of like scrambling for jobs, and it meant so much. And I was like, who's Jonathan Gold?
It was so weird reading a G-chat from 10 years
right?
ago, because I didn't know. I mean, I was like on some level aware we could do that, but you were like, hey, here's the G-chat from when you were going to meet Jonathan at a restaurant to
yep.
have lunch. And you were so nervous, and I was reading it. I was like, this is very weird.
Also weird that the chat mentioned Mamma Mia.
Yes.
And turtles, and Molly saved a turtle from crossing the road
yes.
that same day. But that's beside the point.
Molly, I want to know how you first got in touch with Jonathan and how you got that connection.
He's a family friend of my friend Vanessa's, and she told me that she had been at a dinner with him. Her family and his family had dinner together a lot, and that she had mentioned me, and he had been like, oh, you know Molly Lambert? I was like, why? How does he know who I am? But he read my old blog, this recording, which was really cool. And, you know, I was doing it for free. So it was obviously like very gratifying to hear that somebody who was a huge hero of mine like liked what I was doing at all. And it really like gave me a lot of it pushed me through just like several more years of like not getting paid to write, because I was like,
oh, yeah.
Hopefully I'm doing something that, like, somebody will want someday.
No, like professional acceptance from the people that you look up to can really,
best.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such, like, a sweet person
yeah.
and so generous. And, like, a lot of people have said this, but, like, he and Lori Ochoa, who was the editor of the LA Weekly for a really long time, were just, like, so welcoming to
yeah.
young writers, which is, like, not how most people are at all, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were so, like, genuinely interested in, like, nurturing people's talent and like encouraging people to write about things they were actually interested in. And one of the things that sucks so bad about the LA Weekly getting bought by this right wing company and firing everybody and becoming sort of a zombie version of itself is like there are really just no local publications left in LA that cover the kinds of things that like Jonathan Gold covered, you know? And there are lots of great writers in LA that, you know, want to write about LA and have
yeah.
things to say and maybe don't have a place to do that because there's so much national news. It's like, you know, very difficult to get people to care about local stories, but local news is so important. And I feel like what made him such a great voice was that it was so local and so specific.
Yeah. I mean, between him and Lori, I feel like if there was enough of a nurturing, if there's enough like funding and just like enough space, then you could even easily imagine many more kind of mentors and editors and just like I don't know, intellectual. I don't even know what you would call what they do. They're just like the people who care about writers in Los Angeles and want there to be a really strong community and tradition of writing about Los Angeles, whether you're actually doing reporting or if you're writing about culture or food or anything.
And there's something about that where maybe it's because there's less of us or the people that are really competitive and petty or you're all like only trying to make TV and film, you know? Yeah. But like there's something about just journalism in Los Angeles where it's like everybody, because we're so spread out, everyone just like bands together and encourages each other. You know, and it's nice. And I have met a lot of people doing the Boycott LA Weekly stuff, a lot of great writers and people like Jeff Weiss, obviously, who I've known for a long time, who covers local rap in LA and a lot of stuff that ends up becoming a big story later, you know, because nothing starts as like a big story. Things start as like people start locally. And Catherine Spires. Catherine Spires, who was the food reviewer after Jonathan Gold in the LA Weekly, who I think is just like brilliant and a great writer. And there's all these people and there's just no publications serving that need. And yeah, I think we all just probably grew up thinking of like, oh, it'd be great to work at a magazine and have like a magazine family, you know, like a Mary Tyler Moore thing of just like a group of people that are all interested in what each other are doing and
competitive, you know, in like a healthy way that is good for the greater good of the work everybody's doing.
Right. Competitive in a like you want to be better because your peers are doing so well, not in a like you don't want anyone to succeed because then you can't way, which is like, you know, what a lot of things feel like because everything's so bad in journalism.
I was just going to ask if you guys had any favorite Jonathan Gold reviews or pieces or moments or anything like or when you first discovered him.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up reading him in the Weekly, and getting the Weekly was like a religious experience. You know, like it would come out. It was before the internet, before I think there were just calendars even for things. You know, I would go look through show listings and be like, someday I'll be old enough to get into these clubs. Believably.
And too soon you were.
Even then, I was still excited about it. Yeah. I was like, cool. You know, I would like cut out the schedules and put them on my wall. But yeah, I would just like devour the whole thing. You know, I would read the alt comics and the back page classifieds and all the phone sex ads.
Yeah. Well, for
just
me,
the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, for me, having moved there, not growing up with the Weekly, but it being there when I moved at 17 years old and being a college student and also really not having that much money, there's a lot to be said for reading you can do and journalism you can read and any kind of writing that was free. But
that it was free. I mean, just the whole alt weekly model has obviously kind of collapsed, you know, and part of it is because, you know, somebody was saying, they were like, journalism's not dying. Like, rich people are killing it.
Right. Yeah.
It's not passively dying. People are
still
going
want
out of their
all
way.
That stuff. People still want to know about shows and places to eat. There's obviously a huge audience for that. People spend tons of money on that stuff every year. It's just that on a local level, it's not being valued, or it's not going to make you $1 billion. So therefore, it's not considered worth anything.
Yeah, I mean, newsroom resources are spread so thin, and there's such a glut of national news that people don't want to cover local news because they have to cover the national news.
Yeah.
But, you know, like there is a big news story in L.A. yesterday with a hostage situation at a Trader Joe's. That was a few days ago. But it was one of those
the same day that
like,
Jonathan Gold passed. And
yeah,
it was like a really rough day for Los Angeles.
Yeah, but people were saying like the only place you can find information about this right now is like on Twitter, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that's the one thing about L.A. coverage is that you can find a lot of good stuff in a hyper local sense. You know, I mean, the East Sider was covering it. The East Sider covers just a small group of neighborhoods.
I still follow the East Sider.
Oh, I know. You got to. They're friendly East Sider. But I think one of the great things, just going back to Jonathan Gold, I didn't start, like, I was looking at the LA Weekly for, like, just mostly the, like, creepy porn and the, like, terrifying news stories. I was like, death, murder, like, it's free paper.
Well, back when Nikki Fink used to write on it, too.
Those are my stops. But I, after Molly was like, oh, you know, Jonathan Gold emailed me, I looked him up and I was like, this is amazing. So I came to him kind of late. It was only 10 years ago. But I mean, I think one of the best things that he did was to push you out of your neighborhood and out of, you know, your regular haunts and to, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to the San Gabriel Valley 10 years ago to just be like, oh, I just want to try like this little restaurant. It's like a 40-minute drive. I'm just going to go and try it, or like going, you know, driving to Encino and like, you know, taking the time to kind of like find these places that he would recommend. Oftentimes I thought he was wrong. I'm just going to say it. I was like, I'm not feeling this.
You're not going to have the like blood cubes or whatever.
Not going to have the blood cubes. I think I even can blame him for pie and burger, which I love pie and burger. Everyone does but me. But look, it's my hill to die
pie
on.
Pie and burger is one of those places I only know it because of Jonathan Goldman. I've never eaten there, but I'm just like, I know that name because of him. Like,
well, you would like the vibe anyway because it's really Twin Peaks.
The vibe is great.
I was saying coming there as a newcomer to the city, but not having a lot of money and just like, yeah, also not being honestly that psyched about Los Angeles when I moved there.
Tables have turned.
I've told you guys, you know, like I thought that I was going to move to New York and I was going to go to film school in New York, and that did not end up happening. I ended up coming to LA instead. And so I definitely had a period of like, it's so spread out, like every single complaint that everybody's ever had about LA. And I think that Jonathan Gold's writing, which I immediately just like, I can't remember not reading it as soon as I got there. I think there was something where when it's something as kind of deceivingly minute as food or contained as food, you can find it. It's more approachable. So it's like, I can't learn everything about everything in Los Angeles and the entire history of it, but I can start by learning about the food and what food you can get in each neighborhood and what these different cultures are that like have formed this history, this like food history in these different areas of Los Angeles. And that kind of became a way for me to make sense of what arriving there was just like this hodgepodge. And I posted his review of Oaky Dog, which I've always loved. I always remember the line about like not being able to eat it unless you have the tum of a 16-year-old. But that's kind of like how I felt about Los Angeles moving there. It's like it was so overwhelming. I ate so much junk food and horrible stuff like Oaky Dog and every single hot dog in Los Angeles, I think, at some point. And kind of found a way to find the joy and being like overwhelmed by the unfamiliar.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like he and I talked about it because we were both locals. And it's like one of the things I loved about the way he wrote was that he didn't write about Los Angeles he didn't write about it in a way that's like for people who don't know, or he wasn't like trying to convince you that it's good. He's like, everybody who lives here, who's like a regular person, knows it's good. It's only people who come from other places and like tell us what they think it's like in an annoying way. It's like, yeah, we know there's a lot of like people who want to be actors, but there's also a lot of people who are just like regular working class people who live all over Los Angeles, and food is like a way that people, you know, bond and socialize.
Well, speaking of that,
speaking of how people use food,
can I just say something really hatery really quickly? And I'll keep this all, I'll tell you guys who I'm talking about when we go off the air. I was talking to somebody who lives partially in Los Angeles, and we were talking about Jonathan Gold, and she has a job in the entertainment business, and said that nobody that she worked with, who are all people who came out there to work in the entertainment business somewhat recently in the last few years, none of them knew who Jonathan Gold was, and didn't understand why he was important. And this is just like, again, like he contains this microcosm of every single problem or thing that is in Los Angeles, because that just made me feel like if you don't know who Jonathan Gold is, like you don't care about living in Los Angeles. I feel like especially being a privileged person with an entertainment industry income, you're not going to find out about, like, you're not going to go and read some of his old columns or something. Like, I feel like
a lot of rich people who move to LA aren't interested in like
in participating.
Discovering LA or participating. They just want to turn it into like what they want it to be, which is why then when like the hills are on fire and they're like, we didn't move to New York for this, I'm always like, go home.
Go back. Yeah. Don't come here.
Don't come here.
Yeah.
But also don't come here. We're full.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Emily, you
can
come back.
Let's take a night call.
About food.
Yes.
Hey, night call ladies. It's 8:44 p.m. in hot Austin, Texas. And I've got a question for you.
My name is Maggie, and I just found out what mukbang is. M-U-K-B-A-N-G. It might be mukbang. And I want to know what you girls think of it, because I think it's horrifying. And I also feel that it's a tool that anorexics could use to, you know, essentially get their fix without eating food. Yeah, so if you guys can weigh in on mukbang or mukbang, I appreciate that. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Had you guys heard about mukbang or mukbang before?
No, I had
but
not.
But I've heard of, like, I feel like eating
feeder,
videos.
Or feeder porn.
Yes.
I want to say first, I don't think that it would be something that you would use for eating disorders, because, like, doesn't seeing someone eat just make you want to eat? Like, when people see someone smoke on screen, it makes them want to smoke. It doesn't make them go, like, ah, got
my... So you're saying it's not Finspo?
No.
Right. It's like the opposite
of
Finspo.
It's like the opposite.
Yeah. I think when I saw that she... before I looked it up, I thought that she was talking about one of these, like, kinds of calorie-free noodles that you can get.
Yeah, me too. Zoodles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was thinking it was like that kind of thing that just fills up your stomach. But no, it's so. Can somebody explain
people
this?
Eating like a grip of spaghetti
right.
on camera?
On camera. And it's streamed live too, right?
Like,
and people.
But it's not competitive eating. It's like just people doing like a live stream, like a Twitch of them eating.
Well, this on the Wikipedia, it says that. The hosts call themselves BJs, broadcast
yeah.
jockeys, and they interact with people who are watching the broadcast through chatting. BJs sometimes claim to be the audience's avatar and will exactly follow what people ask them to do. So in that sense, I kind of could see someone with an eating disorder be like, stuff yourself, like, eat pizza. Like, I could see that.
Well, that's feeder porn, right?
It is feeder porn.
I mean, is everything that involves live streaming yourself like a form of camgirling?
I mean, how far do you want to stretch the definition? I mean,
like,
I think
it's not like, how is it different from like somebody being like, here's me playing video games, like watch me play video games, which like tons of people
right,
watch.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
which
I remember
so
when
weird.
I was when I worked at a camera store, and one of my coworkers would like borrow the cameras on the weekend to help his friend shoot these videos. I think he did some for Suicide Girls, which dates this, but where it was just, like, videos of girls smoking. Like, that was it.
Okay, well, that's a fetish. So I'm sure there's people yeah. who have a fetish for, like, girls eating. But this doesn't even sound like it's just hot girls.
No,
it's just, like, random
no, it's just
people.
Whomever.
They said it was, like, for people who live alone and are lonely and want to, like, feel like they're sharing meals with somebody.
Right. I mean, to be fair, when I was in college and I was living by myself, which was great, but I would cook and then I would eat. And I was like, it felt like I had to either be like watching TV
yeah.
or on the internet, because you're like, it's kind of weird
just
like
sit and focus.
It's like too much focus. So I could see how, like, you know, if you just set it up like a bunch of people eating with like all their webcams, just like we're all sitting down eating, having a virtual potluck.
I think a lot of people also just like to have that sort of parasocial company if you are alone, which is why people like leave the TV on.
Right.
That's why people that's why Twitch is so popular.
It's also why
yeah.
people like podcasts.
Exactly.
Hey.
It's that thing too of being like, they are speaking just to me. And
right.
then
but we are
this will
speaking
also
just
come
to
up,
you.
Like, this will come up again in our final topic for today,
I was going to say, yeah. But when we were doing Girls in Hoodies, we would get some super creeps who would just be like, I like your cough.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
People who were like, I like it when you clear your throat. And I was like, ugh, don't like that.
Those were all the YouTube comments, though.
Yeah.
That's the
things
wonderful
were like,
nature.
I didn't
of...
even know you could sexualize, like, somebody, like, sneezing. But, like, of course you can. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if people, like, were into eating videos for reasons other than just wanting to have a friend to eat with.
Right.
I think biological functions can be really big triggers for people who don't have a lot of, like, really intimate time with other people. Like, if you're not in a close relationship with somebody or living with your family, I think that sometimes hearing, like, if you happen to be standing in a train or something and you hear somebody cough or you hear somebody sniffle or something, sometimes it can be alarming because you're just like, oh my God, I haven't heard another human sound in a second.
Right.
I think especially in like bigger cities too.
In college, there was this girl who wrote an op-ed for the paper that was called "Touch the Loneliest in Most Abstract Sense."
What? Well, we'll talk about that after the podcast, Molly.
I always think about it. It was like, you know, a girl's like freshman year like essay about like sometimes you just touch someone's hand and like isn't it weird to touch someone?
I totally agree. I'm not a fan.
No, she was saying you crave it so badly that then when you get it, you're like, why can't I have this?
Today's episode is sponsored by Songfinch. Songfinch is a personalized gifting company that brings stories, feelings, and memories to life through one-of-a-kind songs. With personalized songs starting at $99 and delivered within 7 days, their community of professional songwriters will handcraft the best gift you can give. So I don't know if you guys remember, but Molly and Emily and I got to make a song with Songfinch a while ago, and I think I can say that it remains maybe like one of the best online buying experiences of our lives.
Yeah, it's the best service anyone's ever used.
I've recommended it to so many people because I don't feel like there's anything like it. I've listened to our song probably 100 times.
Yeah, it's such a good gift idea because it's very funny and you can listen to it again and again.
Yeah, it's funny and good. And I mean, that what we asked for was something that was like funny, casual, and silly. But I can imagine, you know, going all sorts of other directions.
Yeah, they'll
it.
Really, whatever you want, they will do for you.
You basically give some information about what kind of song you want, either for yourself or for a gift, for a friend. You can give names, information. You basically work with this songwriter to make you a personalized song. And then it lives on its own URL on the Songfinch page. So you can download it, visit it. Whenever the tide pulls you there, you can read all your lyrics, learn about your songwriter. Our songwriter was really, really cool. And we're going to play a clip from our song in a minute so you guys get a sense of how awesome it is. But yeah, they have a bunch of different options. The foundation option is $99. But so today we are offering our listeners $20 off their personalized song from scratch. There are a bunch of different options on Songfinch. So the personalized song from scratch is what we chose. You use promo code CALL at songfinch.com to redeem it. And then you just get started on making your own amazing song.
Yeah, it's a great birthday present.
It's a good wedding present. It is.
Really good for like Mother's Day or Father's Day.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you might need a song for. And Songfinch is here.
A bad day. You could do a really sad song about your friend's bad day.
Yeah, just to
make
to
her
cheer
feel better.
Someone up with a song.
Do you guys want to hear a part of our song?
Yeah, play it.
And she gon' plan for disasters. Molly love the valley, send you articles to freak you out. Emily got the remedy, film and music critic she could be. Capricorns are Virgo and Libra, yeah. We just tell her like it's gon' be.
So it still holds up. It's still pretty much the best song ever written.
Pretty much the best song anyone's ever heard.
Test doing research. Yeah, so anyway, we're huge, we're Songfinch heads over here. So again, go to songfinch.com, enter the promo code CALL, and get $20 off your personalized song from scratch.
Maybe she should watch more eating videos.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, would we do an eating video?
Absolutely. How much? Let's sell to the highest
bidder. Who wants to sponsor it? Sugarfish.
Email us your option.
Yeah.
We're probably opening ourselves up to a world of
you know what though? I don't think if we get an indecent proposal that somebody is like, eat this ramen for $1 million, we're all going
to
do it.
Well, we have to make sure it's not poisoned, and then I'm down.
Oh, speaking of eating, of consuming things that turn out to be poisoned.
Oh, yes.
We all saw Sorry to Bother You.
Let's have a chat about
this movie.
So Sorry to Bother You it is still in the process of being rolled out to multiple theaters. So check your local listings.
It's working its way across this land.
Yeah, spreading like a disease, which I love. I mean, it really is. Like so it's a film by Boots Riley, who it's his first film, but he's a musician and he has a band called The Coup. Bay Area guy, super progressive, lefty, socialist type dude. And I have never, I think maybe since Get Out, and I hate it, there's already like been a controversy about comparing the two. Like, obviously, we can have two wildly creative debut films by Black directors, and we don't have to compare them directly to each other. But just in terms of like how much I've had people G-chat me or text me and say, oh my God, I saw Sorry to Bother You, just like out of the blue, people I haven't talked to for a really long time.
It's like a viral movie. Everybody who sees it tells everybody else to go see it. I saw it this weekend and the theater was totally packed. And
mine
it was
too.
Just exciting that this movie was getting a packed theater. I mean, yeah, I think it's a very different movie from Get Out, but it is also sort of a horror comedy, a dark satire of what is going on.
What's crazy to me is that apparently he wrote the screenplay in 2011.
Yeah,
he published it in
McSweeney's.
Yes, in 2014. Yeah. And that was after, I think there was a New York Times article about it that it sounds like we've all maybe read, but he was, he wrote the screenplay and then he snuck into a like Napa Food and Wine private event because he wanted to give it to like Viggo Mortensen. Is that right?
Sure.
And then Viggo was like, no.
Ooh,
and then he emailed.
That's a stain on Viggo's resume.
Well, he may have been like, I don't know, because I think like nobody, you know, and Boots Riley has been like, I didn't expect anyone to take it because it's like if a musician's like, hey, I have a screenplay, like everyone should run away. But then after Viggo passed, he emailed Colin Firth's wife because I guess maybe Colin Firth was a fan of The Coup. And Colin Firth was like, I don't know. And then I think the first person he got was David Cross because they did a benefit together. And David Cross was like, I'll do it.
And
then
David Cross needs this so badly.
And then Patton Oswalt. And then Dave Eggers published the screenplay as a book for McSweeney's in 2014. And now it's here. But it feels as though it could have happened. Like, it feels as though someone wrote this like last month.
Well, all
you
this
know?
Stuff has been happening for a long time. Well,
yeah,
I think one of the amazing
things I've seen him say on Twitter, like he's a good follow on Twitter right now, even though most of it is him retweeting people who are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry to bother you. But he is answering some people's questions and it's pretty interesting. And one thing was somebody asked him, like, did you write in that there were these tent cities all over Oakland? Because, like, that's a thing now, but I know that you wrote this script a long time ago. And he was like, originally it was sort of like a 5 years into the future kind of post-apocalyptic type thing.
Oh.
And then it was like, well, no, they actually just, like, ended up being there and we used the actual tent cities that are in Oakland.
Oh, I just assumed
they had
tent cities in Oakland always because we do in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I think that they're more, there are more of them now. From what I understand.
The Bay Area is obviously, they have all the same problems that LA has in, and they're bringing some of them here now with tech and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this was the movie about tech that needed to be made.
Yeah.
I was so stoked coming out of it, and I was like, somebody made a postmodernist movie about something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I was like, it reminded me of some other things like that, of like Being John Malkovich and stuff. But I was like, all of those movies were just about like, you know, man pain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a movie that actually has like a point and a purpose. And it uses all those techniques. But it all feels very just like, yeah, it's like one degree removed from how insane everything is. And then.
And it's just creative. I think pulling off the thing where you do have a point to make and you are making a statement and a very political statement, but also being really creative and
funny.
Yes.
Funny and like staying light on your feet and continuing.
Yeah.
That's like a hard thing to pull off, I think.
It's a super hard thing to pull off. I mean, all the performances are so great. I love Tessa Thompson. I would
so
watch
much.
Her in anything.
Oh, I think the best line in it is when he's introducing her. Her name is Detroit, and they were like the other people in the car are like Detroit, and she's like, my parents wanted to name me something that sounded American, you know. I was like, wow, that's just perfect. And obviously all of the names are puns.
All the names are good.
Isn't there also at some point in like a propaganda video, it's like directed by Michelle Dongri.
Yeah.
Which
there's
like all these Easter eggs.
Yeah. That too felt like sort of like it was like a just a huge leap forward for that kind of like postmodern jokey.
Exactly.
Everything's, you know, movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like something.
Yeah. I feel like we shouldn't give too much weight. I saw somebody tweeting the other day. They were like, what's the expiration date on talking about the ending of Sorry to Bother You? Because it does have an insane ending that I somehow managed to partially forget until the trailer started coming out for its theatrical release. Because I saw this at Sundance and then I was like, I was totally, I mean, it was one of my favorite films there, obviously. And I remember a lot, like there was kind of a muted reaction among, not everybody. I mean, a lot of people there were very stoked on it, but there were a lot of people who were like, it's too much for me. And I'm like, I feel like though, like we want this much stuff.
Yeah.
But I had kind of, for whatever reason, I guess just time, like forgotten or made myself forget about the ending of it. And then I remembered it a month before and just started laughing to myself because it's so insane.
I was like laughing my brains out the whole movie, and not just because when I first walked into the theater, they were showing the trailer for A Star Is Born, and I went like,
ha,
which is like,
I can't wait for that movie. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I was just laughing through the whole, I know the trailer's just amazing. I hadn't seen it big, and I was just laughing so hard when Bradley Cooper shows up looking all Kris Kristofferson.
But everybody should go out and see Sorry to Bother You.
Everybody go see it. It's also a real, I mean, I rarely go to the theater to see movies on opening weekend.
Yeah.
And this, I was very glad I did because it was great to see it with a crowd and everybody should go see it. And then
and
send us your night calls about it.
Don't leave the theater right away.
Yeah.
Because that happened in my theater. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I hate to have to say that Armie Hammer was amazing.
He was.
Why do you he's so great?
I know, but you know. He's been difficult. And then I was like, God damn it. He's perfect in
this.
He
was.
Yeah. Speaking of group experiences.
Speaking of having a TV family that you feels as real people, I wanted to talk about Terrace House before I left because I had just gotten into it and was like, what is this thing that I've been watching?
And it's now, your Vanderpump Rules.
It kind of has become that. I feel like it's my Made in Chelsea for you. It's a little chiller than Vanderpump Rules. I think Vanderpump Rules definitely has more of like a that it's got that cokey glaze on it.
People yell at each other. Made in Chelsea is like people are very polite because they're so posh and British. They would never like raise their voices, you know? So even when they're being very mean, they're like, you're a cunt, innit? No, they would never say innit because that's not posh.
But so Terrace House, which I think the week that this comes out, there will be new episodes on Netflix. So you have enough time to binge watch the first two parts of the current season, opening new doors. And Terrace House is a reality show, a Japanese reality show that is on Netflix. And it is also, I think, broadcast on Fuji TV in Japan.
And Brian Phillips are the only people I know who watch it, but you both watch it so much. Or no, Lindsay Weber, too.
Lindsay Weber, I mean, I know a handful of people who do.
Brian Phillips has been posting a lot of like Terrace House gifs as they relate to soccer, which I feel like is a very specific Venn diagram.
There are so many. There's a really, really good Twitter account that's Terrace House Out of Context that just has the subtitled, like, especially of the commentators. So I'll explain the show for those who haven't seen it. It's just a reality show about they explain the premise in every episode. Like, six people are chosen
to live in a house.
Pick to live in a house. All they provide the house and two cars. And basically, people just live their normal lives, like, including having jobs. They don't give them money. They just give them a place to live. They have to buy their own groceries and stuff. But, you know, they get to live in this fabulous house and be on TV. And it's about 30, 40 minutes per episode. And the seasons, instead of just having one cast that stays there the entire time, people can decide to leave at certain points, and then they're replaced by somebody else. So it's kind of the feeling of, like, actually living in a house with housemates, and then somebody decides to move out, and then you get a new roommate. And they
Is it boring?
Well, you are kind of amused by it when you start watching it because you're like, wow, this is so chill. Like, I love what counts for a conflict in this. You know, like somebody is gossiping about how somebody's hot pot isn't as good as they expected it to be or something. Like, very, very low-stakes stuff. But then I think because it's almost like by turning down the volume, you start to be attuned to these little subtle dynamics and personality traits that I think that normally you don't get to really think about in much noisier and edited reality shows.
It sounds like it really replicates the stress of living in like a co-op environment with like five people.
And I hate, like, I have had roommates in the past. Not all of the experiences have been terrible, but in general, having grown up as an only child, it's incredibly stressful to me. I think I feel like you can relate
Tess
to this.
Tess is also
like,
not a fan.
Yeah, it's just a lot. Like, even the slightest thing, like that feeling of like somebody looked at me weird as I went up to my room after the kitchen. Like, I bet they hate me. I bet they're thinking about me and how much they wish I would move out and they're gossiping about me.
I was watching Interview with the Vampire the other day and I was like, this movie's about cohabitating for like hundreds of years and how that's what it's like to live with people. Yeah. It's just like weird. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's like in real roommate situations, the things that bother you aren't necessarily like the big crazy things. It's like some weird little annoying thing somebody does over and over again. And eventually you're like, I'm going to kill this person.
Right. It's when people leave glasses of water all over the house and then deny that it's their glass of water.
Oh, I'm the person in my relationship who does that.
I do that, Molly.
Because I need new water at
each
place.
But it's so weird because then every room in the corner of every room is like this glass of water. You have no idea when it's from.
Right. Like, that seems like a real terrace housey conflict because it's like,
you know they're cleaning up after themselves. Like, the water thing, I feel like, is very specific.
But just even that thing, there's slugs.
So the current season takes place in this, like, semi-rural, like, kind of ski resort type town. But then I went back and I'm watching Boys and Girls in the City, which is two seasons earlier, and just takes place in Tokyo. And those kids are, like, there have been waves of it, but, like, they tend to trend very sloppy.
Messy millennials?
Yeah.
I feel like there was a shift after maybe Jersey Shore, no shade to our friend Nicole, who I love, but of the, like, the grossness of the living spaces in Jersey Shore eventually just started stressing me out so badly. And then I felt like I noticed a shift of maybe other reality stars being like, oh, I can't be that gross. Like, things got cleaned up. If you think of early Real World, too, it was like real
gross. Right, because that's is what happens when six people are picked to live in a house. Yeah. It's like, it's the tragedy of the commons. So, everybody's like, somebody else was supposed to clean the living room.
Right.
No one ever does.
Discussion of like house cleanliness makes me want to talk about, since we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to highlight this character that has been really on my mind lately. And she left the show recently where I am in Boys and Girls in the City. Her name's Natsumi. She's an aspiring actress from Osaka. Shout out to Osaka. And
does she bring the drama?
She does. And I was so refreshed by her because everybody on this season had been kind of boring up until when she showed up. And I was like, oh, she's fun. She's like a little more like direct with people and tells them that they need to clean up like on her first day and all this other stuff. And I've been reading the Reddit for Terrace House as I go through this and trying to protect myself from spoilers and realize that like almost everybody thinks that she's just a complete sociopath. And her last kind of blowout before she leaves is genuinely scary. She has this thing where she gets drunk and you can see like this rage thing turn on in her where it's like her personality leaves her body. And the commentators that like comment throughout the episode, which is the other reason why the show is amazing.
Oh, that's so weird. There's commentators.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. It is the smartest thing. It makes it so that you really feel like you could binge five episodes because you have a break because you're like talking to your friends about the show.
Are they going to wash that dish or what? We'll find out.
No, it's really, it's so addictive. But anyway, I actually like talked to my therapist about Nat-chan, Natsumi, because I was like, I had this like experience where I was like, oh, finally somebody who I feel like I can like get with her. Like, I understand her thought process. Like, everything she did, even if it was bad, made total sense to me. And then everybody was like, she's a sociopath. She's a psycho.
Well, you know, some people just don't like a bossy lady.
Yeah, true.
And it sounds like she came in with a strong personality and some people just didn't like that there was a type A lady. But it is interesting because in reality shows, it's not always the leader types who succeed. Tess is the world's foremost scholar on Survivor.
Yes.
Well, if you bring too much attention to yourself in a competitive situation, then you're putting a target on your back, Molly.
Right. It's often like the people that you think are going to win or like be the best at it, like they are perceived as threatening by other people and taken down. And it's the person who like is behind the scenes stirring the pot and being like, you should be mad at them for this, that generally ends up succeeding.
But that's on a like vote them out kind of. Yeah.
But people will kind of decide it's their time to go usually when they don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend and they are not interested in anybody else in the house or like their romantic prospects are over.
It sounds kind of like the Japanese version of the long-forgotten favorite starting over house that I feel like I've talked about on podcasts
before. What's that?
Just when people wanted to start over and they'd all move together into this house, and then when they felt like they had, like, their shit together and they'd figured out
a new
path.
Was it like a halfway house?
No, it was starting
it was
over
just like
house.
People at pivotal moments in their lives. I mean, that is kind of what Terrace House is, except it's mostly 20-somethings.
Wow. Yeah. I've heard we should all watch Love Island.
Oh, yeah, I'll watch Love Island.
Richard Lawson has been saying Love Island. He just has been doing tweets that are like, straight people are insane.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds good.
I agree. We should watch Love Island.
Do you guys remember a show, another like mostly forgotten reality show called Forever Eden?
Yes.
Tess knows all about this.
I didn't watch much of it, but there's still a seed of whatever it was latched
into my
brain.
That was like Terrace House in that it like kind of theoretically never ends. Like, it just keeps, I mean, it did end because it wasn't very popular. Nobody watched it. But the premise was that it would just keep going until everybody found love and hooked up.
You know, I was a big fan of Utopia.
Utopia too.
And when they canceled Utopia, I was like, I hope they just keep living on this commune. And then we find them like 20 years later and they've just made a society outside society.
You guys, we have to wrap it up. But I'm thinking that because we're talking about this, that we should ask our listeners to be our callers and call 240-46-NIGHT with your favorite reality shows. Whether or not there could be a reality show that goes on forever, and
whether
if
or not Natsumi is a sociopath,
and I was going to say if you've watched Terrace House, is Natsumi a sociopath?
Oh, and what you would like to see us eat, and for how much?
Yeah, mukbang. We're taking bits on the mukbang. I don't like blue cheese or olives, so those are off the table. Molly doesn't eat meat, but she will eat fish. I don't know what Emily dietary restrict. You don't like cheese either, Emily.
I can't have cheese, but everything else.
All right, pretty much. Everything else is okay.
All these rules are off the table if the price is right.
If the price is right, we can throw it all at us.
Thank you so much for listening. You can give us a call at 1-240-46-NIGHT with your night call. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And thank you, as always, to our producer, Ben Hosley, here at
AudioGirl. Yes, thank you, Ben.
And we'll see everybody next week.
See you later.
Bye.